Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levine. Here she comes. You ready? She announced yesterday she's running for president. And if you don't know who I'm talking about, then you're just not American. I mean, welcome to our country, because I welcome immigrants. But how can you not know who I'm talking about? Of course I'm talking about Hillary Rodham Clinton, former senator, former secretary of state, former first lady, and yet somewhat of an enigma, I think, to many people. People often ask, where is the real Hillary? Who is the real Hillary? Who is Hillary Rodham Clinton? They can't quite figure her out. Well, I have a little bit of an advantage in this score because I have worked with Hillary Clinton. Yes, it was only on one project. I don't want to exaggerate. It was only on one thing. But on that one thing, I actually managed to change the mind of Hillary Rodham Clinton. I'm very proud of that because the woman, is brilliant. That I wasn't burping on my words. I was burping on my lunch. I want to be very clear about that. Anyway, Hillary Rodham Clinton is brilliant. And in fact, at my alma mater, Yale Law School, I was told by professors who taught her, because she was only there maybe 20-odd years before I was there. So there were some professors that taught her and Bill and taught me, that in her class, Bill Clinton got third in the class, which is pretty impressive for a highfalutin place like Yale Law School. Bill Clinton got third in the class. Hillary Rodham got first in the class. I think that may be actually what attracts Bill to her. Bill has once said that he wanted a woman who wasn't afraid of him. And that was Hillary Rodham Clinton. I think she's a fascinating character study in that, in many ways, the image of Hillary is a reflection on what we ourselves believe. I'll get to the real Hillary, I promise. I'll give you the inside scoop. I'll tell you everything I know in this hour. And of course, you're welcome to call in and give me your impressions of Hillary. Check out my new toll-free number, 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, and you can let me know what you think about Hillary. But let me just say, before I get to the real Hillary, let me talk about the perceptions of Hillary. So for a while, when she was First Lady of Arkansas, she was Hillary Rodham. She kept her maiden name, and that was considered quite extreme for the time. Today, we don't think anything of a woman keeping her name and not taking her husband's name, particularly when she's got a strong career. But at the time, that was considered quite a move. Hillary has a long tradition of being a strong feminist, which, again, I consider extremely positive. And for all you feminist haters out there, let's remind everyone what feminist means. Feminist does not mean women are superior to men. Feminist means women are equal to men. Just like advocating for gay rights or African-American rights or Latino rights or religious freedom doesn't mean that anyone is superior to anyone else. It is merely a question of equality. She did take her husband's name in the presidential campaign of 1992, largely, I think, to help him win that office at a time when it was still a little weird for Americans. But her first claim to fame, and it's going to take those of you old-timers like myself who remember this, her first claim to fame was in the 1992 election. And I hadn't really heard of the Clintons prior to then. I knew Bill Clinton had delivered a very long speech that was boring, in fact, nominating Michael Dukakis in 1988, and I didn't think much of him because the speech wasn't that good. He's gotten a lot better since then. But she would be very famous because she was attacked about what she did at her law firm, and she said, and I don't have the exact quote, but something to the effect of, I could have stayed inside, I guess, and baked cookies, but I'm not, you know, some Tammy Wynette standing by my man. I may be mixing two separate statements she made. But the heart of it was she was not going to be the stereotypical housewife. That's not who she is. She's very, very smart. She's very talented. And she's always been that sort of feminist hero for me, and I think for lots of feminists, which includes obviously lots of women. Another thing for all of you out there, you don't have to be a woman to be a feminist. I am a proud feminist and always have been. And there are women who are anti-feminists. Not too many, but they exist. Phyllis Schlafly, she's still alive. In any case, then of course came the healthcare debate. She tried to do a very, very difficult thing to reform the U.S. healthcare system. And if you want to know how difficult that is, check out when Barack Obama did it. They still call it Obamacare. They still hate it. And she didn't succeed. It was very, very hard to do, and I don't really fault her for that. Harry Truman, one of my favorite presidents, also tried to reform the healthcare system, give us universal care, in fact, in those days. And had he succeeded, we wouldn't have any of the problems we have now. But that's kind of how she became famous. And then she sort of, after that failure, hid in the shadows for a while until, well, she came out more as wife, angered wife, than political scholar with the Monica Lewinsky scandal. Since that time, she distinguished herself, obviously, as senator from New York, Secretary of State. The things I disagree with her as Secretary of State, I think it's fair to say, based on all of the accounts I've read in the press, that I actually agreed with her. I just disagreed with the president, Barack Obama, with whom many of you know I have some disagreements on foreign policy. I don't think her domestic policy differs much from Barack Obama's. But the heart of the thing about Hillary, and again, I'm going to get to the real Hillary in a minute, but the image of Hillary, I think, is very much dependent on how you feel about feminism, about women. And I don't say that about everyone, all right? I mean, I love Elizabeth Warren. She's one of my favorite people. I love what she stands for. And frankly, most of the attacks on Elizabeth Warren are not based on gender. They're based on her views, which is the rich and the banks are basically giving us a raw deal for those of us who aren't in the top 1%. But they don't generally attack Elizabeth Warren for her gender. Not that often. Hillary, I think, is from a bit of an earlier age. She is an older person. She has been around a lot longer. She, I think, has confronted misogyny more. Just to give you an example, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who is older than Hillary Clinton, has confronted it even more in her day and age. So I actually think some of this is going by the wayside. Still, I think it's amazing that the United States of America still has not elected a female president, given that so many other countries have. Israel famously elected Golda Meir in the 1970s, and she wasn't the husband of she didn't succeed her husband as so many other women in high positions did. And I remember, I think for a time, I kind of resented Hillary Clinton getting her fame from her very, very talented husband, the best president in my lifetime. And I wondered whether that was fair. And then I learned about Hillary on her own merits. And that's the story I'm going to tell you in the bottom half of the hour. But first, before we get to my story with Hillary, I want to get to your knowledge or thoughts about Hillary, because I know all of you have your own views. And just give me a call. Let me know at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Let's go to Ron in Palm Springs on line 5.
Hi, Mark. How are you today?
I'm good, Ron. How are you?
All right, good. I lived most of my life in Washington, D.C., and I was executive vice president of the Hotel Workers International Union for many years before I retired. And so I've been to the White House with the Clintons a few times. I was a Tom Harkins supporter. But in talking to people about Hillary Clinton, when they tell you how cold she is and she's not a nice person and she's evil, and she is one of the, not only the smartest, like you said, but one of the nicest, sweetest, easiest people to get along with I've ever met in my life. She's great.
So tell me your experience. First of all, tell me how she is on labor issues, and then tell me your personal experience with her just being nice, I guess.
Well, the Clintons have always been great on labor issues. As a matter of fact, I had a friend, Karen Termentano, who was an assistant to the president. And when Clinton traveled, every town that he went to, every city that he went to, she would call me and make sure that he was going to a union hotel if there was one available. I think that as far as labor is concerned, Hillary Clinton would be great. She'd be absolutely perfect.
What about, before I get to her personally, to this day, people in the labor movement still complain about NAFTA. Now, obviously, that's Bill Clinton, not Hillary Clinton. But would you be curious your thoughts on that?
I was asked by the National AFL-CIO, me and another fellow from the United Food and Commercial Workers Union, to go and meet with Steny Hoyer, who's an old friend of mine, at the time that NAFTA was coming up, to try and convince him to stick with labor and vote against it. And we went into Steny's office, and Steny said, look, before we go any further, let me tell you this. He says, I've got a 95% labor voting record. The guy who's running against me has got would have about a 3% labor voting record. If you want to not support me over this one issue, then go ahead. But I happen to think that it's the best for the country. So we argued with him for about an hour and then left. And naturally, he voted with Clinton and voted for NAFTA. I don't know a president that wouldn't, though.
Bernie Sanders? Elizabeth Warren, maybe? Not that they'd ever become president. I mean, Bernie Sanders has no chance of becoming president, and I like Bernie.
I like Elizabeth Warren a lot on the issues that she's good on. I'm not sure where she is on a lot of other issues.
Okay.
I don't know where
she's not running, so you don't have to do a. I mean, actually, for all the people on the left who are doing a Warren Clinton comparison, it really is irrelevant because Elizabeth Warren is not running this year. I think she's going to run in 8 years, and I'll support her at that time. But look, I don't mean to be churlish. I think Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton have great labor records, but you just got to call a spade, and NAFTA is still something that people complain about, and that's why I asked you about it. Let me ask you about her personally. Her personality, you said she was really nice behind the scenes. Tell me why you say that.
Well, my wife is a professional singer and pianist, and a couple of times she's been asked to do events for issues where the Clintons were present. And the last one was for an Irish American voting group, and they were having sponsoring an event for Hillary in D.C., and she worked it. Well, Hillary came over to the piano and chatted with her and talked to her, and we reminded her that we'd been at the White House a couple of times for Christmas parties. And by the time she got done, my wife said to her, my wife is not real political. She said, Hillary, I hope you run for president someday, and if you do, I'll be there to work for you.
There you go. That's really good. I'm going to share my own stories with both Bill and Hillary. I actually worked with Hillary. I only met Bill once, but oh my God, he's maybe the most charming person I've ever met. You practically melt when you meet Bill Clinton. I'll tell you this, though. I think you'll agree with me, though, that Hillary doesn't have the natural charm that Bill does, although, to be fair, virtually no one on the planet does.
I was just going to say, I don't think anyone has the charm that he's got. My wife worked a party. She was asked to work for Al Gore when he was running, and Gore wasn't there. Clinton was coming to give a speech, and it was like, it was 100 people at $5,000 a head for dinner.
Wow. Can I get a contribution to my campaign, Ron, since you're we'll talk about that later.
I didn't pay to go.
Okay. I'm just asking, because if you know those people, I'm running for a state delegate, and, I would ask for far, far less. But go ahead. Finish your story.
Anyway, they asked my wife to come and entertain again, and so she came, and Clinton was late. He was very late. So the place filled up, and she was playing in the reception room, playing and singing. And all of a sudden they said, all right, everybody come on in for dinner. So they went in the dining room for dinner. And about the time they went in the dining room, Clinton came in. And he stood in the reception room and waited while they had couples come out and take pictures with him. And when they finished, he was supposed to go in and make the speech. Well, instead, he walked over to the piano. I was standing there with her, and he said, you know, you're really good. And she said, yeah, I know. And he said, that last song you played, do you know who wrote that song? And she said, yeah. And she told him the name, and he said, that's right. He says, he's from Arkansas, and he's a very good friend of mine. Well, he sat down on the piano bench and talked music for about 10 minutes while these people were all waiting.
That does not surprise me. That is the Bill Clinton that I know and love. I'm afraid I've got to take a break, Ron. We're way over. And I've got some other callers, too. Thank you.
Hoping they get back in the White House.
Thanks you. I hope so, too. And we'll talk about that when we come back. At 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. This is Mark Levine, back after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the show. We're talking about Hillary Rodham Clinton in the second half hour. I'll tell you about my personal experience with her and what I learned from working with her, so stay tuned for that. For now, we've got callers at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. Reggie from Georgia on line one. How are you?
How are you, Mark?
I'm good.
How are you? Why do the Republicans hate and attack Hillary with so much prejudice?
The same reason they attack Barack Obama, the same reason they attack Bill Clinton, the same reason they attack or they would attack Joe Biden if he runs. They attack any Democrat fiercely because they want to win elections. Simple as that.
Is it personal or is it just politics?
They make the politics personal. The ones at the top really just care about politics. They just want power. And Hillary stands in their way, just like Obama stands in their way. And so they attack her, and they make their minions hate her in the hope that some of that spills over to independents and she'll lose the election. But it's entirely political. They don't really hate her. They just want power.
And by minions, you mean their radio and TV talk show?
Absolutely. Right? I mean the people who listen to Rush Limbaugh and Fox News and all the rest of it. You got it.
Yeah, and I keep thinking they're being either, this may sound like Alex Jones territory, but either they're being mind-controlled or influenced by these people to attack people that they don't even know or they hardly even ever met in person, you know, up close and personal, face-to-face, nose-to-nose, toe-to-toe, all that kind of stuff.
And, they're going to attack any powerful Democrat. And listen, Democrats attack powerful Republicans, too. It's just that I think we are more likely to attack them for their policies. And unfortunately, most of the Republican attacks tend to be personal attacks. I don't hear them saying, you know, women shouldn't have pay equity or we shouldn't raise the minimum wage or we shouldn't, make the voting rights easier. I mean, these are things that Hillary stands for. You don't hear them complaining about that. They attack personally because they know they can't win on policy grounds.
Yeah, but isn't that time that should be cut out of politics entirely?
You know, sure, Reggie, and it's about time that unicorns start flying with butterflies. Look, I wish that were the case. I wish we lived in such a world. We don't. We have free speech, and personal attacks are as old as this country and, frankly, millennia older. So I can't say I'm surprised, but...
It's... Like you said, they do it because of personal reasons, because they can't run against their political.
That's exactly right. That's exactly my belief. Thank you for your call, Reggie. If you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I'm going to share my own personal experience with her after the break.
Got a conservative who casually misquotes the Bible and the Constitution? Send him to school with Mark Levine.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop with Mark Levine, talking about the real Hillary Clinton. As I said in the first half hour, I think that many people put their own feelings into the person who is Hillary Clinton. We talked about people who put their own views about feminism one way or the other, and they use her really to reflect their own views. And Reggie from Georgia talked about how it is that Republicans, I think, use Hillary as a foil for their own political purposes. I want to talk about the real Hillary Clinton, the woman I know, the senator that I worked with on one matter. and actually how I came to change her mind. And I promise you, I will give you that story this hour. But I also want to take your calls at 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275. I will, however, leave enough time, I promise, to get to my personal experience with the real Hillary Clinton. Let's go to my longtime libertarian friend, Brian in Denver on line two. Hey, Brian, how are you?
Hey, good. How you doing?
I'm good.
Oh, that's good. Well, on the Hillary thing, I know you're going to think this is a Republican talking point. It's not. It's amazing that a woman could have this much, or man, unless you call me anti-woman, could have this much time in public service but really accomplish so little. I'm a big fan of Leslie also, and I think Leslie Marshall's article on the, quote, successes of Hillary Clinton speaks volumes in that it is so devoid of real accomplishments. I mean, you know, her greatest success as Secretary of State was that she's the Secretary of State that traveled the most. I mean, so she got the most frequent flyer miles. I mean, is Libya better off because of her? Is Syria better off because of her? Is Egypt better off because of her? Is our relationship with Russia better off because of her?
Well, let me interrupt you on foreign policy, and then I know you've got more to say. On foreign policy, I would argue that President Obama has not been the most successful president. You've probably heard me long enough to know, Brian, that I'm quite critical of much of President Obama's foreign policy. What I've noticed, though, and I think if you read the New York Times or the Washington Post and you listen to what she has said and what her aides have said behind the scenes, is that she has largely not supported Barack Obama, where I have not supported Barack Obama, namely, for example, on Syria, allowing the chemical weapons to take place, or in not being tough enough against Putin. She supports arming the Ukrainians, as do I. It's interesting. She and I probably have a more hawkish view, not only than Barack Obama, but than most Democrats. So it's kind of hard for her to talk about it. But
okay,
I think, and again, I'm not saying she's John McCain, because she's not. But I think that some of the great Obama foreign policy failures, you got to lay at the feet of the president, not at Hillary Clinton.
Okay, so the reason she really didn't do anything as Secretary of State would be Obama's fault. Got it. Okay.
Yeah.
So then,
I seriously believe that. You may not like the answer, but I do believe it.
Okay, well, hey, I'm fine. Everybody thinks she's so wonderfully accomplished and able to do everything. She wasn't able.
Well, you know, when you work for a president, there's only so much rope that you get,
Henry Kissinger, Baker, Colin Powell, a lot of very powerful Secretary of States were able to convince their presidents to do the right thing.
You know, Henry Kissinger, I have no doubt, convinced Nixon. I have no doubt Baker convinced George Bush Sr. I don't know that Colin Powell, and I like Colin Powell, I don't know that he convinced anyone. I would say that Dick Cheney and Weinberger ran that shop,
okay.
and I don't think Colin Powell actually did.
Well, then let's go look at her domestic accomplishments, right? Okay, so her healthcare thing, you and I are old enough to know, failed miserably. Okay,
well, now, wait a minute. I think it was a good idea. Just because it politically did not succeed, and that's a fact, doesn't mean I didn't think it was a good idea. There are many ways it was superior to the Affordable Care Act.
Okay, well, then one of the other things that Leslie cites in her U.S. News article in support of Hillary was, you know, and this really shows how much people have to grasp at straws of her to find something to say that she actually accomplished, was that she supported older women getting mammograms. Well, I can't name, but there's probably about 100 million women in this country that support older women getting mammograms. So
Brian, I think when you hear my story, which you haven't heard yet, and you, if you want, you can hold, and I'll start telling my story of my own personal experience with Hillary Clinton, you'll hear how she changed my mind. Tell you what,
well,
Brian, if you got 15 minutes to sit, because I was going to tell the story anyway.
Yeah,
I could do it after your call, or I could do it during your call.
I'll hold.
You'll hold? All right. But it's going to take about 15 minutes to lay this out, but I'll give you some good time at the end. This is the story I was planning to tell this half hour anyway, and it's about my own personal experience with Hillary Clinton. So, first of all, I did go to Yale, and I did hear a lot of really good things behind the scenes from her professors about how smart she is, so just put that aside. When I first time... I met Bill Clinton once in my life. I talked to him for maybe 5 minutes. We've described how charming he is. No one is second in their fondness for Bill Clinton. I met Hillary Clinton 3 times in my life. The first 2 times I met Hillary Clinton, I was not impressed. I got to be honest with you. I met Hillary Clinton in political settings the first two times. One time, I think, was for Al Gore. I don't remember who the other time was for. She was advocating on behalf of some candidate. I went through the line, the shake hands line. I shook her hand. I said some nice things. And it was almost like she looked through me. I got to be really honest with you. I didn't feel a connection. It felt like a job that she had to do. And I didn't like Hillary. I going in to work for Barney Frank, which I began in early 2001, I was not a Hillary Rodham Clinton fan. I was always a Bill Clinton fan, not a Hillary Clinton fan. The third time I met Hillary absolutely changed my mind, put me on a 180-degree turn. And I got to explain the background of this because it's important to understand the context in which all this happened. George Bush in 2002 had something called the Faith-Based Initiative, H.R. 7. The Faith-Based Initiative was something that he supported along with Joe Lieberman. And remember, Joe Lieberman at that time still was Al Gore's vice presidential nominee. He was still thought well of in the Democratic Party. This is before he lost in a primary, in a Democratic primary, and moved to the center and then later endorsed John McCain. Okay, so got to keep in mind, this is back when Joe Lieberman was respected as a Democrat. He was much less as time went on. They had this idea of a faith-based initiative, and the idea was the government would give money to churches and synagogues and mosques and other religious institutions and soup kitchens and so forth. And they felt it was urgent in giving this money to these religious institutions to allow the religious institutions to discriminate on the basis of religion. Now, we've talked about this with the Indiana bill, the Religious Freedom Bill, because it's kind of the same issues. The Civil Rights Act of 1964 does prohibit discrimination in hiring on the basis of religion, but it has exceptions. It says that a religious organization can discriminate on the basis of religion, and you can understand why. You don't want McDonald's to decide who they hire or on the basis of their religion. But when it comes to teaching catechism, you can understand why Catholics want Catholics to teach catechism, why Jews want Jews to make sure that food is kosher. You get the idea. Religious organizations are allowed to discriminate on the basis of religion. And I think that's fine as long as there's a separation of church and state, which I don't think I need to point out is the essence of the First Amendment. Congress shall pass no law respecting the establishment of religion, nor prohibit the free exercise thereof. So, as long as government and religion stay separate, I fully support the right of religions to use their own private funds raised by members of that religion in any religious way they want, to teach religion, to proselytize, to hire or fire people based on their religion. You can say to your rabbi, he doesn't believe in enough Jewish law. You can say to your imam that he doesn't practice halal enough. You can say to your priest, he doesn't respect Catholic doctrine. That's totally fine. You can fire or hire someone based on religion. And that's in the Civil Rights Act of 1964. But what George Bush tried to do was to cross that boundary, to actually subsidize churches, to give direct money, which had never been done before. And I want you to think about how awful that was. There was already a couple ministers in churches who had switched their sermons to be more pro-government, pro-Bush, in order to get some funds. We know all across the globe what it's like to have state churches. And when you have state churches, I would argue it weakens the state, it weakens the church, people are less religious, and they're certainly less trusting of the people, the ministers and priests and rabbis and so forth, when they're connected with the government. Because you would hope that your religious leader is basing it on morality, on religious teaching, and not based on a kickback from the government. So it hurts the religion. It also hurts the government. It hurts specifically the people who are non-believers. So we do provide money already to Catholic charities, to Jewish Federation, to United Lutheran Ministries. They all get money right now, and the deal is they don't discriminate on the basis of religion. And they provide soup kitchens and homeless shelters. Catholic Charities does a particularly good job, but Catholic Charities hires non-Catholics, along with Catholics, to do the job, because caring for the homeless does not require you to be of a certain religion. You can be an atheist and care for the homeless, and nor does it require that in a soup kitchen. So I thought this was a dangerous affront to religious liberties. My boss did, Barney Frank. So did a number of others I worked with, Chet Edwards, Bobby Scott, Jerry Nadler. And we had a problem. The problem was that the Republicans controlled the House and the Senate. We were going to get rolled in the House. We did get rolled. In fact, H.R. 7 passed in the House. And in the Senate, the Republicans had a filibuster-proof majority because they had several Democrats cross the line and agree with them because Joe Lieberman had convinced a number of Democrats to support this bill, which, as I said, basically did some awful things. It allowed government to formally subsidize religion, which I think is a really bad idea, and it also allowed religions to discriminate on the using government funds. And I don't think any tax dollars should go to jobs that say Muslims only, or Protestants only, or Lutherans only, or any religion only. Government funds for government jobs should be available for anyone who's capable of doing the job. So we understood this, and we started going from senator to senator. And after a while, I got to say, Barney Frank, Chad Edwards, Jerry Nadler, they dropped out and left it to the staff and later to me alone, because I'm kind of persistent, to go door to door, senator to senator, to make the case. We had to get Democratic senators to change their minds, or this was going to become law and a real attack on the First Amendment for the first time in American history. So I remember very clearly talking to Senator Mary Landrieu of Louisiana. And we went to her. I think there was someone with me when I went to Mary Landrieu. We made our case. And I could see she was kind of staring into space. She was giving us the 10 minutes that we were allotted. And when the time was done, she hadn't heard a word we said. And she wished us a good day. And I knew we hadn't won her over on that bill. And then came Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton I met with alone. It was just me. It was me and Hillary Clinton and a couple of her aides. So we have witnesses if anyone challenges this account. But there were only four of us, maybe five of us in the room. My bosses, the congressmen, weren't there. But I knew that I was talking to a very intelligent person. So in preparation for that meeting, I had written about an 8-page memo. I'd written the same memo for Mary Landrieu, and I'm quite confident that no one in her office read it. But I wrote that memo, and I submitted it to Hillary Clinton and her staff a few days before our meeting. And the first thing Hillary Clinton said to me when she greeted me was, "Mark, I want to talk to you about footnote 4. She wanted to talk to me about footnote 4. What was in footnote 4? Why was it so important? And why was I so impressed she read it? I'll explain when we come back after the break. If you want to call in, it's 888-488-MARK, 888-488-6275, right back after this.
Rumor has it he quotes the Constitution in his sleep. Is it super nerd? No, it's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levine. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275.
It's true. I don't keep up with the Kardashians. This, of course, is Clinton's song, Don't Stop Thinking About Tomorrow, and it just makes me so wonderfully nostalgic. I miss Bill Clinton. I still like Bill better than Hillary. Sorry, Hillary, but let me finish my story. Let me tell you why I grew to like Hillary Clinton. So we talked before the break. George Bush's faith-based initiative would have allowed the government really to use government funds to discriminate on the basis of religion, a very, very dangerous precedent. But it was trickier than that. And this was all in my brief that I don't think other senators read or their staffs read. It was a complicated legal brief. I'm a lawyer. Hillary Clinton's a lawyer. We're both Yale lawyers. And basically, the way it is there was language in the statute that seemed like it would have prohibited this religious discrimination. But there was a loophole in that language, a loophole that a president could drive an executive order right through. And footnote 4 was an earlier act, a very tiny little bit, it was a substance abuse act, that allowed religious discrimination, where the act had exactly the same language, I discovered, as the big act that George Bush wanted to put forward. And even though the language was ambiguous on the question of whether or not the government could discriminate on the basis of religion, George Bush signed an executive order allowing exactly that discrimination. That executive order drove a Mack truck through the loophole of that tiny bill, and thus I knew that language would not protect against religious discrimination in the larger bill. Now, Hillary Clinton was a co-sponsor of the bill. To be a co-sponsor, that doesn't just mean you support it. It's like you helped write it. You didn't really, but it's like you're introducing the bill together. It was Joe Lieberman's bill, and Hillary Clinton and more than a dozen Democrats were co-sponsors, and along with the Republicans, this was a bill that was going to pass easily through the Senate. So when Hillary Clinton asked me about footnote 4, which was this little bill, this little law where George Bush had quietly done exactly the thing that he threatened to loudly do now, I knew she'd hit on exactly the answer, and I explained to her how this language, which purports to stop discrimination, how a presidential executive order could blow a hole right through the loophole in the bill. And Hillary Clinton's eyes flashed, and she got angry. And she said, but Joe told me that this wouldn't happen. Joe, I knew, was Senator Joe Lieberman. And I said, Senator Clinton, what Senator Lieberman didn't tell you about was the executive order, did he? And she said, no, he didn't. And then she said to me the magic words. She said, Mark, I don't know if you're right. It appears that you're right, but I don't know, and we're going to check up on you. And she looked at her two aides, and they both kind of nodded their head, and she stared me right in the eye. She said, we're going to check up on you and make sure you're right. I said, Senator Clinton, you should check up on me. I want you to check up on me. I want you to see that I'm right about this. But she said, if you are right, I will not only withdraw my co-sponsorship of the bill, but I'm going to vote against it, and I'm actively going to encourage others to vote against it. Within 1 week, Hillary Clinton had withdrawn her support from the bill. Her aides, by the way, pushed back and they said, Senator Clinton, it doesn't look good politically to withdraw from a bill you've co-sponsored. She said, it doesn't matter. We're going to do the right thing here. If I wasn't told the truth about this bill, I know the truth now. We're going to do the right thing. And she pushed back against her aides. She withdrew her co-sponsorship. And at a meeting of Democratic women senators, she got all 12, however many there were, 10 or 12 Democratic women senators to switch their votes, including Mary Landrieu, the same senator I had struck out with just a couple weeks before. She changed their votes. That put a filibuster up on the bill. That defeated H.R. 7, and America's religious liberty stood to this day. I can't speak for everything Hillary Clinton's done on her whole career, but seeing her face to face, working with her, sitting next to her, watching her mind grasp policy and get it in a way that no other senator I talked to got it, and knowing that she put the right issue, doing the right thing in front of her own pride, in front of her own politics, because politically it wasn't that good, told me that I can proudly endorse Hillary Rodham Clinton for president of the United States. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it. Brian from Denver, I know you've been holding all this time. What do you think of the story?
Well, I mean, the story is probably the right decision was made on that law. You know, I'm a libertarian, and you know, funding churches is not a good idea, but the government should stay off their backs, too. But that's a whole different issue. So she changed her mind on one thing that liberals would have come after her for hard later. That's one thing.
But here's the point about this. The point is that she wasn't too proud or too high and mighty. I mean, I'm just a staffer. I was a lawyer. I was a Barney's legislative counsel. She didn't have to listen to a word I said. Most senators didn't listen to a word I said. But the point is she was able to recognize truth and react in a way that hurt her politically because it was the right thing to do. And that told me that she would have the courage to stand up to things that are not in her political realm because she thinks
really?
It's right. And yes, I really believe that.
Really
believe that.
Okay. Well, look, you're old enough, you and I are roughly probably the same age, but the amount smart. Okay, fine. Let's stipulate she's one of the smartest women to ever walk the face of the planet. Right? There's a lot of smart people. Smartness is not. It might be.
I think she's smart. I think she's committed. I think she's honest. You may disagree with me on the emails.
You think she's honest?
I do.
Okay, so you lived through the torture of sleaze of the Clinton administration. Now, Bill, and you hit it right on the head. See, Bill was a leader. I mean, Bill was able to do was he led the Democratic Party.
Real quick, because we're running out of time, Brian. I'm sorry. I only have an hour. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, Bill, here's the point. Hillary is not qualified. She could have probably be president, no doubt. But she's vastly not good for the job because she doesn't care about perception. she doesn't care about honesty or truth. I don't care what your story says.
I don't think she cares about perception. That's the point. Everyone in politics has to care a little bit about perception. But I think Hillary's the real deal. I'll tell you, we're going to continue this argument, Brian, into the future.